Good day, and welcome to the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour. The Breezy Breakfast is a weekly community gathering focused on raising awareness and sharing ideas about important issues that concern residents of Guelph. For the last 4 years, this event has taken place at the Breezy Corners Restaurant in downtown Guelph, facilitated by two Guelph City Councilors, Phil Ault and me, James Gordon. Since the restaurant closed at the onset of the pandemic, the gatherings have moved online using the Zoom platform, expanding our mandate beyond those able to attend in person. And it's these meetings that we're sharing with you in this audio format. Zoom can be sketchy in the quality of sound delivered, so we ask for your indulgence when voices occasionally sound like they are robots. They are, in fact, real, articulate, passionate humans, and they are bringing a message we think you'll want to listen to. Today's episode is around the topic of police defunding, recorded June 18th, 2020. Our special guests are the Guelph chapter of Black Lives Matter, and you'll hear their voices in this order: Kevin Sutton, Nicole McCallum, and Genevieve G. And we'll hear from Toronto City Councillor Josh Matlow, who is bringing forward a motion around defunding to his council soon. You'll also hear the voices of our virtual meeting coordinator, Dustin Brown, and you'll hear Councillor Ault and myself asking questions as well. What you're about to hear is condensed from a 90-plus minute meeting, and we begin with a land acknowledgement from co-moderator Hina Mistry. Take it away, Hina.
That some know of today as Guelph is located on the traditional territories of the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation and the Anishinaabe peoples. In 1792, an agreement between the Crown and the Mississauga Nation resulted in Treaty 3. This treaty was agreed upon in an effort to allow coexistence between the Mississauga Nation and Loyalist British settlers, escaping the American Revolution in 1775 to 1783. But the treaty was not upheld and devolved instead into a long drawn out process of pushing the diverse Indigenous communities who have lived here since time immemorial to the margins and out of the area surrounding where the Speed River and the Aramosa Rivers met. Thank you.
What I'll do is I'll describe who I am. I'm Kevin Sutton, for those of you who don't know. Local poet, hip-hop artist, as well as a youth facilitator in terms of doing workshops with youth. And I also do diversity, equity, and inclusion training with organizations. And I'm one of the founding members of Black Lives Matter Guelph. So we formed basically out of community will. I think folks, there was so much community need and support that was reflected, I guess, in the 5,000 plus person solidarity march that happened. And there was a subsequent GoFundMe that started to accept over $3,000 worth of donations that were directed in the direction of Black Lives Matter. So what we do is we echo the same call of the Black Lives Matter grassroots movements. We want an end to police brutality, and we want an end to the racist targeting of the Black and Indigenous people of color community by law enforcement, by the justice system, by the education system, by the healthcare system, by housing, and all of the other different systems of service that are fundamentally, contain systemic racism. You know, we're in a 500-year pandemic of structural racism, and the current coronavirus crisis has kind of laid bare a lot of those gross inequities within kind of these exploitative systems that I think now we must reimagine. And I say right now we have the opportunity, and we have the community will to do that at reimagining in Guelph. So the kind of the defund the police movement, folks have probably been following along. It kind of springs, I think, officers being unfairly tasked with responding to community needs for which they are not equipped and are not prepared. And they are equipped and prepared for violent enforcement. Those are the tools that they have that reflect this, and the outcomes reflect that this is what they are equipped for. Meanwhile, community agencies that are equipped and have the appropriate expertise to deliver community wellness outcomes are grossly underfunded. So I think that this course can be corrected with some strong leadership. I think that can happen. I think targeted communities can be served better, and our emergency response systems and our systems of care can be brought up to date in conjunction with planning for a just COVID recovery. I think these things are all intertwined. We're at this kind of cresting point right now where we have this opportunity of this great pause we're all in to do this reimagining, especially here in Guelph. The outpouring of community support for BLMG has been, it's been more than feet in the streets, and it's been more than people putting money where their mouth is. We've had some folks with expertise step up and, you know, like come into this effort to defund the police with some serious expertise. And they're joining me today, Genevieve G and Nicole McCallum, who they'll introduce themselves when we get there. Guelph actually, I think, is a perfect spot for us to do this kind of innovation. You know, Guelph has this history of being a town, a proud tradition of social innovation and being kind of ahead of the curve and setting the tone for kind of the rest of Southern Ontario and wider. So what we're trying to do, you know, defunding the police, it kind of feels like a slogan. And I think people, once they kind of recognize what's involved, recognize how real it is. But it deserves its proper due research. And that's why I brought these two fine individuals with me as well. It deserves the proper attention in terms of developing a program. And to that end, we're looking at something that will be formula-based that we could start in Guelph as kind of a test subject zero, but also modeled for other communities and scale to facilitate like provincial and national transitions. You know, we're working towards something that could be a system of care project. And we already have some kind of sponsorships in the community between the Guelph Neighborhood Support Coalition, who are helping out with this. And we're also reaching out to organizations like the Poverty Task Force. And there's like another number of other organizations we'll be reaching out to, like the SOS team, the Critical Care Mental Health team. We're reaching out to the Family Health team, Guelph Family Health team, Community Health Center. There's a lot of different organizations that we plan to build coalitions with to be able to go through a process of development of a plan that can help Guelph transition from policing to more up-to-date community care and emergency response. So I did see that Mayor Cam Guthrie put out some motions to the Police Services Board. I did see that. And the idea of kind of freezing the police spending for now or increasing the budget feels like it's a promising sign that we can proceed with good faith in this endeavor. I think that the review of the carding process is consistent with things that MP Lloyd Longfield has stated in the GNSC AGM, was talking about how carding was unconstitutional. So that's encouraging. I do think that where we're at in terms of a relationship with the Black and Indigenous population in Guelph and the marginalized population is that there's a lot of broken trust. And I'm not sure that's a kind of trust that can be rebuilt in any meaningful way without really reimagining what community care looks like. That's kind of where we're at. What we're seeing is this is kind of what Cam's put forward is kind of a promising first sign that the conversation can move forward. But it's very obvious that it's not enough. I think that where we're at is we do need, and we have this opportunity to re-envision and innovate what community care and emergency response looks like. Especially when, you know, folks do point to the budget and the $46 million spent on policing. And yet we still have police officers who are overtasked, overworked, responding to too many 911 calls, are constantly in overtime. So we know that throwing money at this situation is not going to solve it, more officers does mean that more of the marginalized community will be targeted because that is the culture that we have found in policing. And I feel like there's a new process that we can all engage in, all stakeholders coming to the table, because this obviously not working for policing either when they are continually going on, having to go on stress leave and they're continually having to be overworked. It's obviously not working. We do need to reimagine it. We have this opportunity now to reimagine it. And I think we can create something that works for everybody. I think, you know, many scholars have put forward the idea that You know, when we liberate the most marginalized among us, we liberate everybody. So when we can take care of communities, the LGBTQIA plus communities, the immigrant communities, homeless communities, people struggling with poverty, people struggling with addiction, community care means we don't throw anybody away. We don't target anyone with police violence. So what I'll do is I'll get my peers on the Black Lives Matter Guelph Defunders Task Force here to introduce themselves. And we'll start with Nicole McCallum.
Hi, everybody. I'm just catching some of the comments in the background, too, about defunding being a difficult slogan. And I certainly agree it is, and I would encourage all of us to unpack why that it's difficult, right? Defund, just like degrowth in economics, is a term that goes against everything that we're familiar with. And so quickly, before I go into anything around that, I am coming to you guys today as an economist. I am working on my PhD at the University of Waterloo. I have a 10-year history in entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurship, and I run a few companies as well. My research focus is on quantifying some of these funny metrics in the economy that we don't tend to like to put numbers behind, and that has a lot more to do with the fact that we simply haven't played with that data as economists, which we're in a data world, so we can really put numbers behind anything we want. Nowadays, and so we can measure growth, we can measure things a lot more efficiently to the realities of today's world, which is why I got involved with this particular effort with Kevin and the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think that Guelph has a particularly unique opportunity to be an innovator here. And so and my role in this is looking at the economic case behind it. I think that if there isn't really an argument beyond that we do need to take action against the very strong existence and prevalence of systemic racism, and from an economic perspective, there are all kinds of ways that not taking action will produce a lot of inefficiencies. Whereas taking action, and particularly in the context of the opportunity with Guelph, can produce a lot of return. So the idea of defund is terrifying because it's drastic, right? And so the key that I'm working on thinking about is how do we, for decision makers, for people who've grown up in communities that are familiar with having access to a centralized police force, how do we reduce some of that risk and the fear and the perception around a change so drastic so that it can be positive and inclusive? And so in the larger scale, what we're working on is building a decision maker tool, which would allow different policymakers, either at a municipal or larger level, to start plugging in the different constraints of their particular area, population, size of police force, type of budgetary increase, and look at how you could reallocate those funds in a way that would maximize it to community well-being. And now Guelph, you are probably all are familiar, is known internationally as one of the first regions to adopt the well-being index and measure its community well-being. And so there's already the capacity and the data and the measurement to actually look at a dollar per dollar return. How does a dollar that's defunded from a police budget provide return in other areas of the community in a way that we can measure, in a way that you can report to citizens and to other decision makers who are concerned about this, and rightfully so. It's a large change, right? Change is scary. And so I believe that, and in the we haven't had a whole lot of time to look at it yet, but the model and the data that I've plugged in so far, looking at Guelph, there's been large budget increases in police services since 2014, including the new renovation, and there's been an average increase in taxpayer and or other operating costs around 3%. Right, so people are paying for that increase directly. We can make that connection. So money that goes back into the pockets of individuals or back into the community in different ways can be reinvested. The strategic plan 2018 to 21 for the police services absolutely highlights gaps, efficiency gaps in coordination across different social services. So again, we're not just cutting out what somebody has absolutely identified as a very significant service, but as Kevin is proposing reallocating some of the training around how this might how this might take place and how that return could be built for everybody, economically speaking. And so in a nutshell, and I know there's a lot of academic jargon in there, but in a nutshell, what we're looking or hoping to do is to be able to build that test case with Guelph. The first step is, of course, to improve the research and actually hear from those in the community whose voices aren't included in measuring success regularly, and to develop more data to understand what would defunding look like in the context of Guelph. How might this support other community organizations, and how does, and particularly the factors why I'm interested in Guelph is that has the leadership, it has the timing, and it has the alignment with the current budgetary increases, decreases, and patterns in Guelph's history and relationship with police services. And so I think that it actually, like, this isn't a movement that is going away. This is a movement that is going to happen, whether it's a full defund, whether it's a reform, et cetera, in some capacity. And Guelph absolutely has one of the best opportunities to be an innovator and a leader, and with the data and the capacity to measure what that impact is, not only on citizen well-being, but on the actual efficiency of operation in the police force, in the city itself, and so forth. I believe that we can show a causal relationship with the city of Guelph in a reducing the dollar and return to the city and the growth of the city and the goals of the city. The mathematically, I believe that that is possible with Guelph.
What I'll do is I'll turn it over to Genevieve, and I'll just Genevieve, to kind of bring it home, and I'll let Genevieve introduce herself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Genevieve G. This is Eric. This is the COVID world. So he's two. So if we start to lose him, I apologize, but you know, we're all there right now. So I am a preventative wellness strategist. What I do is I combine epidemiology, economics, and socioeconomics to make legislation, strategic planning for governments and corporations. Normally, I pre-COVID, I did a lot of work in diabetes and cardiovascular disease, again, corporate wellness. Since Corona hit, though, my unique set of skills has been extremely high demand. I say that from a sheer point of exhaustion, but I had this incredible opportunity recently to build federal strategy for legislation for Nancy Pelosi's health advisor office. And we were offered that the day before Floyd was murdered. And witnessing the protests, it became very apparent that there is a need to recreate every system. To Kevin's point, when we liberate the marginalized, we liberate all of us. And that was exactly what we were able to do through this COVID response legislation. So to reiterate what we're actually trying to build in Black Lives Matter Guelph is not to create a flash in the pan moment. Racism is systemic, and in order to properly affect change, we have to strip the systems down and rebuild them with Black, Indigenous, people of color centric lenses, trauma-informed practices, and community care focus. It's not enough to take out the weeds, you also have to plant something new. As racism is an overarching system that permeates all systems, what we're gonna build is systems of care that are designed to liberate the marginalized among us and create a greater good. It's not something that can be rushed, this is definitely a process. Along the way, we're going to be redefining how to judge success from a government standpoint, aside from just crime rates and taxes. What does it mean for a community to thrive? And Nicole's work has been incredible on this already. I'm really looking forward to continuing to work with her. We've worked on some other projects together as well. So the question is, how can we use legislation, funding, and the strengths of the community agencies to create better systems of care for everyone? So this development process breaks up into five phases, and this is what we're going to be following as we build this out with Black Lives Matter Guelph. So operational development is where we are right now. We're bringing the team together, identifying and defining our measurable goals, determining success metrics for the workflow, infrastructure, timelines, budget, and a rough strategic scale-up for the systems of care. The next thing that we're going to do is, I'm sure everyone, all the politicians on this call are very familiar with the discovery and audit phase. So we're going to be investigating three main groups during our discovery phase. We're going to be looking into details, the city of Guelph as an entity, all of the municipally funded agencies, as Kevin said, we've already started to build out our relationships there, and the population of Guelph itself. Like Nicole said, the end goal is to have a net improvement on the quality of life for the people that live in Guelph. And we're going to be doing this all with special consideration on Black, Indigenous, people of color, and other marginalized community, including LGBT, visible and invisible, mental health, and everyone else. We're going to be doing a full literature review and analysis of other jurisdictions, and Nicole is the academic in the group, and she's going to love doing that. And just to see what people are already doing around the world that works. And when the discovery is done, we will be publishing an audit on our findings. So after that comes the strategic development phase, which is super fun. So that's when we're going to take everything that we've learned from the discovery phase and build out these systems of care. We're going to be developing a robust financial framework system that will give decision makers the tools necessary to make decisions based on an overall net reduction of harm and net community care impact. This will include a full implementation plan, well-defined measurable KPIs. Again, that's going to be heavily weighted on Nicole. Decision-making criteria, and the most important thing for a really strong strategy is a feedback mechanism combined with an iterative process development loop. That way, whatever we put in place, we can constantly be improving upon. One of my favorite phrases and strategies, change is inevitable, growth is intentional. So the implementation phase is the fourth phase. That's when we actually roll it out. Again, Guelph is the perfect place to run a pilot project for so many reasons. And we'll be able to provide a framework for the transitional phase as well as what to actually transition into. The last phase is the iterative improvement process. Ideally, we'll be developing and training a full-time group to monitor the success of the program and make recommendations as to process improvements based on those success metrics that we're going to be defining. That could ultimately be taken over by some oversight committee, ombudsman group, something like that. So ultimately what it comes down to is that defund police has a great ring to it in a protest, but protests are an acute response to an acute occurrence. For example, a man being murdered. Systemic racism will only be fixed by developing overlapping and generative systems of care that are comprehensive and responsive. To defund police properly, we need to develop a framework for decision-making and systems development within a jurisdiction that consistently puts people first.
The timing, one of the major challenges, not just in Guelph, but this was particularly identified by Wellbeing Guelph in 2014 and continues today, in the police strategic plan, is the lack of information flow between these different levels of services within the community, which creates a vast amount of inefficiency at delivering that care. So a core central piece to any kind of decentralization of a force, whether it's government or other forms of leadership like a police force, is to create space for that information flow to happen very efficiently. And we're lucky to be in a technology supported world in the middle of a space. I teach at the University of Guelph. So anyways, yes, the information flow would be something I think that would be very beneficial.
Thanks, Nicole. I hand it back over to you, Dustin.
Great. Thank you, Kevin. So Councillor Josh Mallow, I know you have to leave fairly soon, so I want to give you all the time that you need to make your presentation as well. I appreciate, though, our Black Lives Matter Guelph representatives describing to us in great detail how much work goes behind a movement like this and how much of it is very intentional and researched and very much not a gut reaction to a certain moment or a flash in the pan, but you know, this is a lot of valuable work that you're all doing to show how this can improve the community as a whole, as well as life for BIPOC and Guelph. So thank you for your presentation. And I'll go over to Josh now. So maybe this is a good opportunity to talk more about the how of what defunding motions look like on City Council. But I will let you take it away.
Thanks, Dustin. Thanks everybody for inviting me into your Guelph community this morning. And I know I'm really glad that I actually had an opportunity to hear all the speakers before me to learn about your approach and some of the context that you're working with in Guelph. And so to begin with, I'm still learning what it means to bring a motion to City Council and where we go from here. And you know, I've been on a personal journey where I've been learning about what it means to be exposed to lessons that I hadn't learned yet about what Black, Indigenous, and people of color experience in our communities. How I relate to the world with the privilege that I have, given the fact that I am a white man and I am a city councilor, and what role that I can play to contribute. And also, you know, empathetically understanding that there are lots of people in our society, as you know, some of you alluded to earlier, that aren't ready for this conversation. The word defund is really scary. You know, we all grew up watching TV shows where the cops were the good guys, and it's hard to understand for a lot of people. When you mention the word defund, does that mean that our communities will be less safe? That's sometimes the first emotional reaction that I hear from a lot of people, because most of us had never been exposed to what the world would look like or what it could look like, or seen models about how successfully we could provide alternatives to policing that could really make our communities safer for everyone, no matter who you are, no matter what you look like. And that's, I think, part of the conversation that's really important. And I found that really early on. You know, one of the first part of my motion focuses on the fact that when we receive the thousands of emails from people who are asking us to defund the police, who do get it, Toronto Council under statute doesn't actually control the police budget itself. And a lot of people don't know those wonky details, but they're important. And so we're tasked by provincial law to fund the police budget, which in Toronto, this may shock some people in Guelph, but it's about $1.22 billion and possibly growing if they get their way. We fund all that, but we aren't privy to the line-by-line budget that we're funding. So we actually can't see what we're funding. And we have no way to hold them accountable when at City Council. So the first part of the motion addresses the statute in the Police Services Act that denies our ability to actually control the very budget that we are funding on behalf of Torontonians. The next part of my motion is a request of the Police Services Board to bring forward at a minimum a 10% defund to their budget, so that we can then reinvest that money into community supports, addressing the roots of youth violence, addressing the roots of the challenges that we experience of inequity in our communities, and then also alternatives to policing. And you know, we can all imagine what that looks like, including models that I've learned about in Eugene, Oregon, for example, where you know, almost 20% of the calls now go to nurses and social workers when there's a mental health distress call, for example, rather than a bunch of uniformed police officers with weapons who will, you know, who do not have the knowledge and expertise, and even the mere fact that they're there often will escalate the situation rather than resolve it. Similarly to a young Black man, for example, who will be in a vulnerable situation and would most likely be better served by a youth worker with a common lived experience and the knowledge and expertise to support, de-escalate, and help and care for that young person rather than a police officer, and especially if that young person has a friend who had been brutalized by an officer in the past, and that level of trust isn't there, and it doesn't work, and it hasn't been working. So another part of the motion then is, you know, rather than we prescribing what this looks like, although I gave you a couple of examples, along, by the way, with youth hubs and other, you know, supports in the community, we ask our social development staff, along with our combating anti-Black racism unit, which we have in Toronto, to come forward to us with recommendations about how to reinvest that money to alternatives to policing and programs in the community. We also ask that we remove military-style weapons and destroy them. And the other, another important part of this is somebody, one of your speakers mentioned sort of the accountability part of this. In other words, you know, making sure that things keep moving in the right direction. Another initiative that I've worked on is the senior strategy for the city of Toronto. And as part of that, we created what's called an accountability table, which doesn't just figuratively bring activists and just interested, you know, people to the table, but it literally creates a table that's formally supported by the city that creates a filter. So in other words, as the policy development happens, the community's at the table discussing the policy development, and then before those recommendations are put before council, they have an opportunity to opine, to contribute, and also to tell us what's wrong and hold our feet to the fire. And it's really healthy, and it creates better public policy. So that's the motion in a nutshell. What I found, going back to sort of the initial sort of fear of even the word defund, never mind doing it, is that we have a mayor who right off the top said that defunding, never mind 1%, never mind 10, is not credible in his words, and a majority of council that has been resistant to even go here. That the reason that I, by the way, I got pushback initially as well by community activists who rightfully said 10% isn't enough. The thought process behind this is that given pragmatically the reality of what we have at council and the mayor's position, what I've been hoping for is to find a way to open the door, to get enough support to at least open the door to even the concept of defunding, so that we can actually set up a scenario during the budget process later this year that if the police don't come back to us with the 10%, the minimum, by the way, of 10% that we're requesting, then council is in a position to stand behind our request and say, well, then we're not going to give you $122 million or whatever that will be at the time that you're asking for. And then we wonder what the province will do in response. The last thing I'll mention, because I don't want to monopolize your time, is what the mayor has done strategically, and it sounds like your mayor's at a different place, and I'm really happy to hear that, where I think Kevin mentioned that he's considering, you know, asking for a freeze, which is fantastic. Our mayor, John Tory, who actually sits on our police services board, has endorsed a police services report that's going to be going to the police board tomorrow, that not only sort of pays, I think it's fair to say, sort of general lip service to our requests. It has some incredibly incremental, you know, nice sounding approaches, but doesn't touch defunding whatsoever. At all. Moreover, the police services board here is actually now talking about coming to us, which I think is so tone deaf, but they want to come to us over the next 2 years with another $84 million request for their budget. And the mayor is endorsing where they're going right now. So we've got a fight ahead of us at council on June 29th. But what Kristen Wong Tam, my seconder of the motion, and I are asking our colleagues to do, is to listen to our communities. I agree with, you know, comment was made earlier. I'm convinced now that this change is inevitable, that policing will not be what policing is today in 10 years or more, I hope, that we will have alternatives to policing, that we will have investment in our communities. And I think all of us are gonna have to decide how we're gonna meet this moment. I'm a product, the fact that I'm even speaking like this is a product of the success of the movement, because they moved me. They helped me understand what this is. I had never used the word defund before. I'd always supported reinvestment, and I got it in general, but I didn't get it as well as I do now, and I'm still learning, and I'm just hoping that more of my colleagues will as well. And that's probably going to be your journey in Guelph as you speak to your colleagues on council and members of your community to help them understand that alternatives to policing, investing in our communities, and defunding the police budget does not make our communities less safe. It makes our communities more safe, and it includes everyone in our communities who have been brutalized and who have been unsafe due to police actions for far too long, and we need to correct that now, and it can't go on any longer. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Mallow. So I know you have to leave fairly soon, so I just want to ask a few questions that were submitted in advance that have to do specifically with your motion. So the first one that we had that was specifically for you was that in defunding the police, I assume that means in your motion, is there a part of it that says more money should be allocated or will be allocated towards affordable housing and better social services? Or is it just a defunding motion in and of itself?
Yeah, a little bit of both. So there's two items in the motion that speak to that question. The first part is a request of a minimum of 10% defunding of the police budget to go to social services and alternatives to police. And there's items in the motion that give examples of some of the social services and speaks directly to alternatives to policing. It has to be a request of the police services board rather than a direction, or else it would be out of order. We legally cannot direct the police services board, and that speaks to the statute. So the police need to come to us with the 10% or more, frankly, that we are requesting, and then I make general references to alternatives to policing and social services. But as I mentioned earlier, I was deliberate about not being a white man with privilege who's prescribing exactly what that means myself. I think it's more important that our social development staff and our combating anti-Black racism unit, in consultation with the community itself, come forward with not what I believe the community needs, but the community says they need, in consultation with their staff and vice versa, to come forward with those recommendations and how the money's spent.
Okay, Phil, you said you have something to comment regarding social services and funding base, if you want to hop in.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think it's a very good question, and I want to caution people on defunding. There are two thrusts to defunding. One is, and I don't want anybody to be surprised by this, is people that want to reduce the budget just purely to save money. The other one is to reduce the police budget because it should be allocated elsewhere. This is going to be a very interesting debate, and I think that all council, as much as we can, because Josh is quite correct, we do not have direct oversight. Certainly, we do need to be questioned on what our intent is through any sort of defunding, redirecting funds from police.
May I speak to that very point? So we did our research, and we discovered that back in 2011, Rob and Doug Ford themselves supported a 10% request to cut the police budget, which was fortuitous for our motion to then speak to maybe another perspective that were emailing and calling us frequently as they are today. And you're right, Phil, they came from a different vantage point. That was all about, you know, efficiencies and austerity. It wasn't about it was about then cutting taxes. It wasn't about then reinvesting into the community. But it's helpful, though, to demonstrate that it's one thing to say, oh, how scary it is to ask for even a minimum amount now. But even Doug Ford supported that. He obviously didn't think that that would create anarchy and chaos. So, you know, it is helpful with our argument, and it's something that we consider when forming the motion.
Could I chime in with what Phil just said?
Yes.
I don't think that defunding the police can happen in two streams. That idea that we're doing it just to save money, that's a non-starter. What we're talking about here is community care and more effective and more compassionate emergency response. That's the goal. The goal is to reallocate and make sure that our communities are looked after. We're not here to save a buck. We're here to protect people's lives in a more effective way and build up overall well-being in Guelph in a measurably sustainable way. That, I think, is the goal. And to that end, in terms of some of the things that, you know, we could be supporting specific to Guelph, I mean, we're dealing with a situation of food insecurity Not enough funds are there to support emergency food programs. We need permanent supportive housing in Guelph. These are things that have been underfunded for a long time and need acute attention currently. Like currently right now, the people who are supposed to be at the top of emergency housing, the folks who are women in crisis who are in situations that are untenable and their lives are in danger, have a 6-month waiting list or longer. That's untenable for somebody who is in crisis to be able to have to wait that long for permanent supportive housing. Community-based care. There's like 4 parent outreach workers in the neighborhoods. Like we need more people working in the neighborhoods. We need affordable rec for kids to actually be able to get out there and grow and learn and socialize with each other. Affordable transit. There's a whole bunch of different things that we could be redirecting this towards that, and even other programs that we could be developing to being able to create greater well-being in Guelph. We can't just look at this as an economic enterprise. This is a well-being enterprise. This is redefining what we look at as success in our communities.
If I can lean in on what Kevin said, the fear that some people have about defunding the police, I know it's emotional, and I know we've all been conditioned, throughout our lifetimes to worry about that. But the reality is, as Kevin said, the more that we invest in our communities, the more that we provide opportunities for our kids to have a path where they never pick up a gun in the first place, rather than spend even more money to arrest them and incarcerate them and ruin their lives and everyone around them, build safer communities. It's proactive and it's generational. And it's, what we find is that it's easier to cut a ribbon on a CCTV or announcing that we're bringing in ShotSpotter or that we hired 300 cops and say, look at us, we're politicians, we're making things safer. The challenge with investing in our communities politically has always been that you're trying to prove a negative. You're trying to prove how many lives would have gone a different direction if you hadn't provided them opportunities in the first place. But I think more and more people will get it. More and more people are demanding that transformational change. And I am convinced that whether it be in Guelph or Toronto, we can get there. The biggest challenge we have in front of us though is, understanding what models we want to provide as alternatives, delivering those alternatives, and bringing down the fear factor from those who are saying that, that chaos is going to reign if we do this.
Thank you. So I want to go to Phil. You had a comment for...
I 100% agree with Kevin. It's absolutely the case that this should not be perceived as a save on taxes. I've said to many people that if I had $40 million right now, I could put 100 affordable units in the ground immediately. The other thing, Josh, this is one that is a challenge. I don't even know why police are funded from property taxes. That tells me that there's a very strong relationship between the protection of property and policing. It from my mind, it should come from the Ontario coffers, but that raises another issue, and that's provincial control.
Kevin, anything to say to that before I go to another question for Councillor Matlow?
Sure. I do want to make sure that people know this is something that we're scaling over time. This isn't like tomorrow we're going to shut down the police, right? We're not, but the intention is not to, that the intention is to be able to take some of the things away from the police that they're really not trained or prepared for and put them in the hands of social services as our starting point. This isn't to say that we're not going to address organized crime in Guelph, that doesn't require some kind of specialized police type response. But even that needs to be re-envisioned so that marginalized communities aren't targeted as well. I think it's that broken window policing that we're trying to kind of curtail right off the hop, where folks, communities are disrupted by being unfairly targeted, and then the fees and fines and court, clogging the courts with all kinds of kind of like little ticky-tack things that can increase police budgets. That's the thing we're trying to avoid.
But this question is, will you decorporatize the transit system so there's no need for police and fare inspectors?
That's a good question. That's not part of the motion, but it is an issue that community members have raised consistently, and I support them. And I'm not a supporter of having the special constables on our system. There have been many instances where people have been unfairly victimized, and so I can't say that we will. I can tell you my position, but of course we're going to need a few other people to agree to that on council and the TTC.
Good. Thank you, Council Mallow. Hina, I think you have one from the chat that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, so I took down a question from Kate, which is directed to Josh. If we would like to see defunding take place in our city, who are the people we write our letters and make our phone calls to?
Well, first off, even though I mentioned the governance issue where we as councils don't directly have control over our police budget, but ultimately we do deliver the overall envelope. So in other words, we can't get into line by line, but we select, the police board will come to us with the overall number, what they want, and then we can decide whether or not we're going to give it. So if we as councillors, elected representatives of our local communities, aren't willing to take a stand, then we're not going to influence anybody else. So the first people who need to take a stand, I believe, are our members of council and our mayors. And we also, because the Police Services Board, aside from the elected members, are not directly accountable to the people of our cities. So the first step is there, but also to our members of parliament. And certainly if you have a member of provincial parliament, and if you have a member of provincial parliament, an MPP in your riding who happens to be a government member, then you let them know that, you want their voice to go into caucus and make demands. And if it's an opposition member, then they need to raise their voices and speak up. But certainly start at the local level, because ultimately, what I see in Toronto is that if we take a stand now, then at our budget process later in the year, if the police don't come to us with what we are requesting, then we are then solid to stand up and say, well, then we're not going to give you everything that you're requesting. But the province is important too, because of course they can step in and do whatever they want as we keep learning. Mm-hmm.
So we have one more question for you, this one coming from Councillor Gordon. So go ahead, take it away.
Thank you, Dustin. Thank you, Josh. I think my question is, you've been addressing it just in your remarks just now, but for the very best use of our collective energies, where do we start with changing that accountability and addressing the province itself? Because that's why we don't have the oversight that we need. It appears to me as if, I agree with you, we need to start locally, but at the same time, we have to be lobbying as hard as we can and as collaboratively as we can with the province.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. The Police Services Act doesn't allow for, again, I can't speak for the Guelph context, you'd have to kind of look into that yourself, but because there are some differences, but certainly the Police Services Act doesn't allow the City of Toronto to have direct oversight over the police budget. So I'm literally trying to strike the word "not" from the statute. Very simple tweak, so that we can rather than not. And so certainly in the Toronto context, and I would suggest you look into like if that would be similar for Guelph. You'd be asked, well, wait a second, we don't control that. Doug Ford controls that. But again, if we, whether it be a person or an institution, if we don't ask for what we want, then there is no onus on anyone else to deliver something that we haven't even taken a position on. We need to take that position as a mayor and council that those are the changes that we want to make, or else it won't happen. And by the way, I just want to add before I forget it, if I may, because it has to be mentioned in this conversation, because this voice hasn't been heard yet. There are voices within the community and activists who are organizing the protests who don't believe anything is good enough aside from abolition and full defunding of the police. And Kevin mentioned earlier, and I'm of like mind that it has to be incremental, just given the reality that we live in. But I think that pressure is really helpful to us because it sets a bar that helps us even try to get the door open. And you know, if we don't get that door open now, I'm really concerned that we're going to go through, you know, society's going to get distracted by the next big event or the next reality TV show or whatever, and we're not going to meet this moment. But we're also finding, I don't know if it's like this in Guelph, but we're finding that there's a lot of people behind that door that don't want it to open because what's going on behind that door has worked really well for them, such as our police association and others. And so we need to kind of, there's a lot of differences of opinion about exactly what defund even means, but we have to work together and even play deliberate roles about some of us asking for more, some of us asking for this, et cetera. But if we don't get that door open, we're not going to set up a scenario where we are empowered as councils to then say, we're not going to give you that however many millions or billions that we currently give you. And then, yes, and then let the province have to step in. But we give the issue the legs that it needs.
So I think the abolition discussion is very important. And Councillor Matlow, if you'd like to stay for this, Kevin had something that he wanted to stay on that. But if you have to go, I know you have a 9 o'clock.
I will push it for a couple minutes just to listen to Kevin.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I do want to make it clear that in what Black Lives Matter Guelph is trying to work towards is realistic abolition. I feel like this is a step. This is the current step that we need to focus on. On our way towards completely reimagining what community care and emergency response looks like. But in that effort, we have to be really realistic and recognize that Guelph Police Services are a stakeholder in this. They have to be involved in this discussion, and they can't be left out. We can't just have like a whole bunch of unemployed officers. That doesn't build community well-being because they are part of our community. So it's about reskilling. It's about creating those transitions. It's about maybe engaging the Guelph Police Union in helping with that transition. But I believe that what we have to recognize is that white supremacy and racism is built into the fabric of this country, and it is built into the fabric of policing. And in the current iteration of the way that police services operate, it's built into its bones. Like, the police service is literally developed from slave catchers and union busters. This is the culture that has grown throughout the entirety of its existence. And the RCMP was deliberately created to eradicate indigenous peoples to make way for settlers moving west. We have to like fundamentally reimagine what these things look like. So I say fundamentally reimagine instead of abolition, but that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about completely reimagining efficiently and with study, data-driven, how do we create greater well-being in our communities?
I'm glad I stuck around to listen to that. Thank you. I've got a community council meeting that I've got to get ready for, but thank you so much everyone for inviting me. I really appreciate it. And I just wish you, by the way, good health and all the strength in your journey in Guelph, and anything that I can do to be an ally and a supporter, please call me.
Thanks, Josh. We'll reach out.
Thank you. Bye everybody.
Many thanks, Josh. Take care.
My delight. Thank you.
Great. So that was Councillor Josh Matlow from Toronto, who has put forth a motion to cut Toronto Police Services by 10% for 1 year, I believe. I hope I'm not fuzzy on those details, but I think it's just a year-long motion. Now, I wanted to throw it back to Kevin and the other representatives you brought with you today. Did you have any comments on anything that Josh talked about towards the end, including the de-corporatizing public transit, getting rid of fare inspectors, as well as kind of who do you reach out to, who do you write your letters to? Any comments on either of those?
I think that where we're at is we haven't even really approached our discovery phase yet. So some of these things that Josh is bringing up, he's already kind of done that research. Our project is, 5 days old? I think Nicole joined us yesterday, day before. Genevieve, right? So this has been kind of gathering steam rather fast. And what we've been doing right now, the phase where we're in, is we're reaching out to community organizations to form a little bit of a coalition of health, of well-being, to figure out what are the needs in the community. What's apparent through this conversation and what I'm also learning is there's a whole other scope to be explored. within what are the different regulations and legislation at the different levels and who's responsible for what. I think fundamentally we do have to create situations where we're not privatizing essential social services that require well-being. I don't think that the basic well-being of human beings within community is something that we can commodify. I think there's room for commodification, but there needs to be a balance between public sector, community benefit sector, and the private sector. So in areas like transit where it's essential, in areas like housing where it's essential, in areas like food where it's essential, we need to have systems where people don't fall through the cracks simply because they can't afford the commodity of it.
So a good answer, and I think speaks to kind of the fundamental problem of what's going on with Toronto Transit. And the question did as well. You know, it said, let's decorporatize this public service so that people don't need to be criminalized for not being able to afford getting around a city. Like, it's a very, very essential feature of living in Toronto, for sure.
Can I say just one more thing? Mm-hmm. It was a point that in a conversation with a member of the Poverty Task Force, was that exact process leads to a perpetual criminalization of survival, right? Because when you have people who fall through the cracks like that, where you have, when you create barriers to access for basic social services, what you end up doing is you end up criminalizing the most marginalized among us. That ends up creating targeting of those communities, which perpetuates a cycle that we need to cut the cycle. It's like a perpetual abuse cycle, right? The only way to cut that cycle is to really reimagine how we're delivering the services.
This exact exchange is the specific reason why we can't rush this process, right? So again, the goal is to use the momentum that's being generated right now to basically put together a long-term strategy on how do we make sure that this really doesn't happen again. And taking all of these things into consideration, how does this affect transit and community housing and mental health care and everything along the way, and really creating a feasible, viable solution for all the years to come, not just saying, you know, 10% defund now, and then what happens the next time we vote in a budget, right? So really trying to reimagine this stuff, to Kevin's point, and taking the time to do it properly, I think is going to make all the difference.
Good. Okay. Thanks, everyone. And we'll see you next week.
That's all the time we have for this week. Special thanks to the Breezy Breakfast team of Phil Ault, Dustin Brown, Tanya Gevert, Hina Mystery, Sequoia Kim, and our many supporters who gather every Thursday at the unkind hour of 8 a.m. Music for this program is by Jules Germ. If you'd like to join us or have any questions, email me, James Gordon, at james@jamesgordon.ca. Thanks for listening.